Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Not so much happening, exciting, but I've been for a long time wanting to talk about Brett Weinstein and his claims that he is censored. And I've kind of indirectly talked about it when we talked of Gad Saad. And there's this crew on the social media of people who have been habituated to a world of censorship in which they weren't censored. And they mostly surfed on waves of views, view counts, and popularity that was driven by the absence of an alternative. In other words, they were the benefactors of censorship. And yet, they want to dip their toes a little bit and get some street creds of being censored. And I think Brett totally falls within that category, because there is no evidence that Brett Weinstein is being censored in the way he thinks. Of course, you can go back in the COVID times. He got a couple of shows removed from YouTube. And he got demonetized temporarily, I believe, from YouTube. Those are actual acts of censorship, but they happened on a specific subject, and they didn't keep him from developing his YouTube channel. He is still there, and he's still getting audiences. It has nothing to do when you compare with how they censor the right. What they go after you, they make sure that you'll never be able to grow your YouTube channel. They make sure that you'll never be able to make money from your YouTube channel. They hit where it hurts when it's the right. When it's the left, they kind of give a little tap on the wrist, but Brett has gotten his tap on the wrist years ago, and he has not been subject to shadow banning on the new Twitter of Elon Musk, although every week I see him claim this. The thing that's happening, Brett, is not all of your tweets are interesting. You're kind of a boomer, honestly. You're not playing the internet game properly. You're ignoring super chats. You're not reading works in your own field. You're kind of not super interesting at this point. You may have been interesting at the moment of the COVID crisis, but you kept hanging on to that subject and you didn't divert yourself into subjects like commenting on the revolutionary phenotype. And as a consequence, people really see you as a one-trick pony, and that will lead to extreme variability in your numbers, Brett. And honestly, most of the tweets that you do in a day aren't very profound, aren't very interesting, and that's why you get lower engagement numbers on those. It's totally normal. It's not a sign of shadow banning because one tweet is like 100 likes and another tweet is 8,000 likes. The algorithm just detects these things. It detects the level of engagement of your early crowd with it, and it makes a decision about whether that's a specialized tweet for just a subset of the Twitterates or it's a massive tweet that everyone will want to retweet. And most importantly, we are now in a more diverse world, a world where white heterosexuals are back on X and they have been given a voice again. They had been banned from most of social media if they somehow stood for themselves. And that includes me. And that is less eyes that go to your tweet. Accept it. You're going to have to be competing with more people, and there will be more quality available to people as an alternative to you, while censorship isn't overarching over the whole of the internet. Frederick von Finkel says, Jeff, you are the only 30, 40-year-old that still gels his hair. Maybe it's an outdated practice, but I think I will always gel my hair. I don't gel my hair when I go out of my house. I gel my hair so that they stand solid in front of the camera, so that I can project an image of solidity. That is what I want to do. T.S. Apostolos says, Jeff, check out Brett's Patreon year to date. Oh, boy. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. It's on the trending down. Of course, it's higher than many creators, so I think he has enough there to make a living. It's totally fine. But yes, this is an illustration of what happens in response to censorship ending for those who benefited from censorship more than they suffered from it. But it's going down, 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 and the videos are going down, down, down. I mean, it's you're still being exposed to much more people than the people who were truly censored, Brett. That is my point. What else do we have? Justin, world's largest crypto casino, Stake.com, reportedly hacked for $41.3 million. Apparently, it was just a leak of a seed key. So someone, you know, these casinos, they have to operate with accounts where there's lots of money in them, and the seed keys sometimes will be given to a script, sometimes will be encrypted to be used by a bot. Sometimes a handful of employees will have them. And it appears that a security exploit has allowed someone to find a seed key that gave access to $41 million. Well, not your keys, not your coin. Watch our guru documents this. It's a key leak, first flagged by analyst Cyvers. It started with $15.7 million worth of ETH taken from the Ethereum wallet, and then eventually the other chains of that same wallet, Polygon, Binance Smart Chain. Very interesting. These events, they show that security in the blockchain world is extremely complicated. It's a totally new world, completely distinct from security in regular websites. It's a totally exciting field, actually. Personally, I find this super exciting. But so there will be losses. I mean, 24 words. 24 words separate you from the greatest Bitcoin wallet in the world. I mean, that is just it. Can you believe this? 24 words. And if you find these 24 words, that money is yours. It's mind-blowing. A blockchain gaming streamer, same type of event, complete loss of life savings after exposing his private key on stream. He has lost 86,000 Matic, about $50,000 worth. And this was his life saving. Apparently, he was streaming to 70 viewers. 70 viewers. And he exposes his private key accidentally. It took minutes before his funds were drained. Out of the 70 viewers, one person took them. Go away, says, I'm late to the show. Has he already covered Brett Weinstein? I talked about it, but I'll do my complete coverage of this later. I don't understand Spanish, but this is the guy who lost all of his life savings. I can understand Bitcoin tears, let me tell you.
Eu mostrei pra chave privada no live sem querer.
The Bitcoin Lost Blues, an international language that binds us all.
E a pessoa já enviou rapidamente. Eu tentei fechar a live e enviar, mas não deu tempo. Que eu tive que criar uma carteira nova e demorou. Demorou 5 minutos, 3 minutos, eu tava nervoso. Não acredito, velho.
Okay, people are telling me he is Portuguese, not Spanish. Okay, I don't know the subtleties here. I just know this is the general Andy Warski race.
Ele me roubou tudo. Todo o dinheiro que eu juntei numa vida, mano. É possível, cara, que eu fiz isso. Que eu dei esse mole.
Yeah, Brazil, yeah, $50,000 if you're Brazilian. I mean, I don't know if he's Brazilian, but yeah, in poorer countries, that is a lot of money to be carrying. So you wouldn't want to lose it, and you'd be very sad indeed. Justin Grayscale asks the SEC to quickly approve its spot Bitcoin ETF. Quickly approve, people are laughing their ass off. Where is the quick approval form? Let me check. Do we have a quick approval form? I mean, yes. Approve it, SEC. It's a fine request, although I'm sure there's no bureaucratic way of ensuring that the SEC does anything quickly. But yeah, I mean, at this point, it's a matter of international competition. You're going to have ETF, Bitcoin ETFs elsewhere, and there's going to be money flow outside of the US. Cloud Warmer says, Jeff, you said the other day there is a pipeline from rapper to right wing. Were you not a rapper breakdancer yourself? What about the libertarian to fascist pipeline? Do you have any comments on this? Ryan Dawson did an entire stream about it the other day. Breakdancer. I have never done breakdancing. Now, what you may be referring to, I once told the story on this stream. I told the story of me being in the Agora at Cap Jeunesse High School. And I was hosting the radio sometimes, and I was around the circle where there were breakdancers. I was looking at breakdancing. I have never been I have never been a breakdancer. And have I been a rapper? Well, you know, I've been listening to Eminem, and I've been perhaps at times doing karaoke of Eminem. And yes, I've been doing beatboxing. Yes, that is true. So my closest street cred to anything you listed there is beatboxer. I don't know how it's coming out on the mic. I would have to check if that's coming well on the mic. But yeah, a radio host. Well, you know. Just putting in the CDs for the high school radio, just changing the song, you know. And then your second question was, what about the libertarian to fascist pipeline? Do you have comments on this? I mean, I've joked with Sargon of Akkad when I first interviewed him on my early show. And you know, he said that he was becoming a libertarian fascist. Live free or die was his motto. That was quite funny. And there is something to be said about it. You know, you start libertarian, but then you realize, okay, there's so much affront to liberty that you need to protect yourself. And eventually, in the protection of your libertarian bubble. And, you know, I'm not a person who became a fascist from being a libertarian. But in ensuring the space of liberty for libertarianism, you're inevitably going to exclude through some mechanism. And that is what has been discovered, basically, by Hans Hermann Hoppe. And the answer is, yeah, if you don't protect your bubble of liberty, and the way he says it, you know, is you need to physically remove the socialist. If you don't protect, if you don't have a mechanism for people who are not willing to respect the libertarian contract, to exclude them from your society, then you won't have a free society for a long time. So did I become a fascist? Well, no. The problem is you need to have an understanding that contracts is what the libertarian world allows, but that not everyone can respect contracts. Some people are just so sick in the head, and in fact, that's probably most people on planet Earth. They cannot possibly participate to an open society of any kind. So you can only physically remove these people. You can only self-defend, because their very existence is an act of aggression against you. Like, as a libertarian pacifist, I'm like, I don't want to engage in any sort of violence, not even yelling, you know, not even verbally threatening. But the problem is, by being that way, I am potentially becoming the victim. If I find myself in one of these, you know, again and again, we show on this show crowds of people just bullying white people and sometimes killing them, sometimes hurting them a lot. In permanent ways. Because of my pacifism, I am totally unfit to be surrounded by this kind of crowd. And so there is like a lot of people around whom I cannot live. I cannot live just because if I want to live by my standard of pacifism, that means either being very far from anyone who could hurt me or being close to them, but then being victimized by them. And so you end up acting like a fascist from the eyes of the internationalist leftist, who looks at this and believes that everyone is equally entitled to presence around you. Everyone is entitled to enter in your country. Everyone is entitled to violate your libertarian bubble. What they don't understand, of course, is it's not a fascistic drive to want to protect a libertarian bubble. It is just, that is how I want to live. I'm willing to live very, very far from, I'm willing to move out from civilization just to ensure that I can have that little space of liberty. But they see this as, oh no, well, you have, and CV totally laid it out in a debate against me on this show. CV, you know, this Italian kind of gender neutral girl that eventually got caught for faking her brown credentials. A whole story. But you know, I said, what if I leave society? What if I leave society and you can take all of my wealth? All I'm asking for is just the means to transport myself out. Just don't annoy me, a backpack, my family, and you can keep my bank account. And she said, no, JF, that is fascistic, because you are leaving with your privilege. You are leaving with privilege, and the people you are leaving behind have not benefited from that privilege. So see, they feel entitled not only to living around you, but to keeping you living around them. That is basically kidnapping. I mean, that is the definition of modern society is basically the same as kidnapping. It's like you can't escape. If you escape, you know, you need all sorts of permissions and immigration, passports, and loss of rights at the border, and whether the other country will respect your rights, that's their choice and they won't. So modern society is catching us into a kidnapping, basically. A kidnapped state. And caught an insect. And that is the feeling of entitlement. The ultimate entitlement of the leftists is the belief that they are entitled to your presence. That's what they do in public schools also. They see, oh, here's a couple of brown kids doing bad on our educational program. Well, what's the solution? They are entitled to be in the same class as the white kids. Let's try to dilute the IQ. But that's not how it works. How it works is the white kid around the black kid will not develop equally. You're going to bring everyone toward the bottom. You're going to filter toward the lows of society rather than toward the up. There is very little evidence for actually a pull-up effect for your from your friend, from your kind of horizontal environment, that is the people of your age, bringing you up. Not much evidence of this. All there is evidence for is, yes, you can be selected. You can be selected in big schools, and then you're going to be more intelligent. But it's not the school that made you more intelligent. It's the school that has packaged you into a package of selection that they just caught you because you were more intelligent. You cannot put people together and hope that they will dilute like atoms in a glass of water. Atoms in a glass of water, they dilute. IQs, it doesn't dilute because there is no transfer of substance between my brain and your brain, other than the words, of course, the words we can speak. Cloudwarmer has said, Jeff, your street name / rapper name is Lil Fino. Long-term regular chat will not forget this. Okay, yes, I was. It's true that I was given a rapper name. I'm Lil Fino. But I don't remember rapping. I mean, I rapped maybe on demand, maybe in response to a super chat, but I don't remember releasing an album, you know? Kokoriko says, take my 20 Odyssey bitcoins, JF. I want you to get rich and use your money to catch more insects. I will. Cloudwarmer says, Jeff violated that insect's rights to the nap. I did. And Ariel Suarez was saying, no, we are entitled to you, Jeff. Well, that's what CV was revealing. I mean, I was very depressed. And I remember Halsey keeps talking about this moment all the time because that's one of the streams he most remembers from me. And he says, oh, I can't believe she said it. She said, you can't leave, basically. You're stuck with me forever. That was a realization that the leftists have no limit. They are literally willing to commit criminal kidnapping if that helps their societal plan. When a man who wears the moniker of a psychopathic serial killer follows you, you know that death is close. Ladies and gentlemen, Leather Apron Club, who I've said lots of positive things about him in his media representation week. That was amazing. That was amazing data processing and work that he did, counting Jews and other people in the media to fully quantify their full representation. Leather Apron Club has followed me on Twitter, and I thought I would make a joke in reference to Eric Weinstein, who had presented Leather Apron Club as a reference to a psychopathic serial killer, when in fact Leather Apron Club had said himself that it was not about this, but about the Benjamin Franklin reference of some sort. And someone said, a lot of people didn't understand that I was just joking. It's a Ben Franklin reference, and he does good work. Check out his YouTube videos if you haven't. But there are people who know me enough that they knew it was a joke. Someone said, I'm pretty sure JF is joking around. So I retweeted that to ensure that people know I was joking. It's great to see Leather Apron Club. I've been having the highest respect for his videos, and the fact that he succeeded at bringing this subject onto Joe Rogan, that is a fascinating accomplishment. That is good media work, to be living rent-free in Eric Weinstein's head. T.S. Apostolos says, Eric Weinstein, Weinstein, over extrapolating the data as usual. Yes, and we'll talk about his brother very soon. I'm getting there, but let's talk about Tucker Carlson. He has an interview with the guy with zero teeth, the guy who has basically a dick-sucking hole in his teeth. So much dick he has sucked, eventually nature finds a way. And for him, it was to lose all of his front teeth so that he can suck the dick with his gum.
You're just a guy who's in town for the night, and it sounds like you're looking to party.
Yeah. Pulled up in a bar outside, and there's this guy that's introduced to me as Barack.
See, he has teeth here, but no teeth here. So that is pretty much a penis-sized teeth hole. And I can actually recover mathematically. Like, it's possible. You guys may not understand because you're not mathematicians, but you can actually derive Barack Obama's dick size just from this right here.
Barack Obama. I had given Barack $250 to pay for coke. I start putting a line on a CD tray to snort, and next thing I know, he's got a little pipe and he's smoking. So I just started rubbing my hand along his thigh to see where it was going, and...
He started rubbing his hand around Barack Obama's thigh to see where it was going.
It went the direction I had intended it to go.
Even though
So this guy claims Barack Obama had sex with him, was smoking crack. I've seen that claim of him many years ago. I don't know what to think about it. It's like you're always going to have a bunch of delusionals who come out publicly and they claim this about celebrities. Is it true? You know, and there's also the WikiLeaks facts. I mean, I will never forget this bizarre email where Barack Obama had cost a lot of like $60,000 of hot dogs. And I mean, $60,000 of hot dogs. Let me tell you that when I was young, my father was giving me like 50 cents. And I was headed to the potato place. And I was buying a hot dog and a big fries for 50 cents. How do you get 60K of pizzas and hot dogs? Maybe it was cold. Maybe there was... You know, a hot dog, maybe it's a penis. I can understand how you can reach a bill of 60K of penises. But 60K of hot dogs, Barack Obama would be a little fatter.
You had sex with him twice. You did cocaine with him, watched him smoke crack twice. You had no idea who he was.
I had no idea who he was.
Let me just ask the obvious question. What was Obama like on crack? Is it your sense that that's who Obama is, just transactional, or that he's bisexual, or like, what is this?
It definitely wasn't Barack's first time, and I would almost be willing to bet you it wasn't as long.
The editing is like a little cheap. but yeah, okay, I might watch it, but I know what this guy has to say. He's been saying it for years. Suburban says, this isn't real. I mean, I don't know. You know, you can integrate a lot. You integrate what this guy says. Okay, so he would have had this kind of prostitute, drugged up interaction with Barack Obama. And then you have the bizarre WikiLeaks email, 60K of pizzas and hot dogs. And then you have, you know, what seemed like a delusional comment by an actress who said, like, before she died, she said, yeah, Barack Obama's wife is a man. And I don't know what to think about all this. None of these single stories cross the threshold of evidence of truly knowing for sure. Taken together, maybe one may have inspired the others, and so it's not particularly trustable data to work with. But, you know, you can think that perhaps Barack Obama is just this big gay guy in the closet. Possible. Frederick Von Finkel sends $5. Thank you so much. He says, Person A believes that racists should be killed or harmed. Person B is accused of racism by Person A. Person A has thus called for the murder of Person B. Agree? Well, the thing is, yes, in certain situations, you always have the... When you say call for murder, you are implying an intentional mens rea state. And, you know, some people will have this mens rea. Some people who do, who call other people racist, they may have intents like this. They may think, oh yeah, you know what? I really don't care if he dies. But some of them might not have this intention at the forefront of their mind, as they say it. So we always have to be careful to attribute criminal mens rea states to things that people say. Because first, there's the question of free speech. I mean, for example, the old crazy woman who held a Trump head that was cut. I mean, it's art. Is it also a call for murder? Well, it all goes into the intent question. And generally, I'm not for interpreting just words as necessarily systematically involving the crimes that they mention. Some people will even say, you know, I will kill you, and they don't mean it. So you have to be careful in making those straightforward equations that link free speech to crimes. Cloud Warmer says, the smoking crack to sucking a president dick pipeline on display. Oh, that's definitely a pipeline that exists. I've been sent by Apollonian Regime is a theory of copulatory trusting. So basically, the movement of the penis in the vagina. He talks about evolutionary advantage. Of course, there have been hypotheses around, oh, well, maybe in certain species, it's meant to pull the sperm from the previous male so that your sperm can be dominant then. Relates to morphology, of course. Some species have big penises, some species have small ones. He describes various things, neurological factors, and then he goes into a whole penis model, talks about the mass, the shape at the end of the penis, and potential relation to insemination models. I didn't read into the detail, and you know, he comes up with all these mathematical equations, pressure dynamics, stipular pressure dynamics, spasmic pressure dynamics, thrusting pressure dynamics. All these equations, I haven't looked into the detail because most of the time, you know, these big laying out of equations, it's theory in your head. To me, it only matters to the extent that it relates to reality, and I'm not particularly interested about the reality of vaginal pressure questions. So it's like, okay, maybe your equations are right, maybe they're not. I really don't care. Sorry, Apollonian Regime. And then he concludes that it's all about pressure, basically. And he doesn't seem to be convinced by the existing model about sperm. And he has some good thinking that I noted at some places because I read this very diagonally. He thinks, for example, that... Any theory of trusting should not be those for which the sperm removal theory. Let me rephrase this. The sperm removal theory doesn't seem to explain thrusting, because although it could explain certain shapes of penises, it would be hard to explain on those species that don't have this shape of penis. Why would they still thrust? Like the rabbits, do they thrust even if they don't have the shape that is of the penis that is meant to extract sperm? But although some thinking here and there I was interested in general, this is all a very mechanical question. Why did we evolve to thrust? There could be different reasons, and whatever they are, I'm sure that they're mostly mechanical reasons. I'm sure that generally, if you look into the past of your millions of ancestors, I can imagine a lot of dusty pussy. I can imagine cracked up pussy that truly needed a mechanical, that was so crusty that the thrusting would have been, it's always better. First, the thrusting gives a sensory feedback. The thrusting is, by the way, when we walk on the floor, we test the floor sometimes with our feet. And, movements of come and go is the perfect way to test something. It's like it gives you a better appreciation of the surface, and it opens the surface if it needs opening. And it gives feedback to the female also that she needs to be humidifying her canals so that the penis passes better. So I'm open to any sort of mechanistic explanation. I think that Apollonian regime, he tends to end his articles by saying, "Oh my God, what is this field doing? They are so wrong. Look at how better what I did is." It's like, no, I don't think it's fascinatingly better. I think there's lots of hypotheses out there, and yours is adding to the catalog. And I personally don't give a shit which of these hypotheses end up being true. Keith Woods has been on the Mario Nafal show, and holy shit, was this a good appearance. I haven't looked at it in full, but I've seen just clips coming out of it, and he apparently did very good. Look at him calling out an Israeli agent on the show, and she goes away. That is the new X. The old X, you had these Twitter spaces with all these leftists speaking forever, being given priority, and other people being censored. But look at what Keith Woods does here. This is like back in the days of Bloodsport, where the left understands they cannot even stay in the conversation because they look very bad.
I can say this. I've been accused of all kinds of horrible things personally because I'm Jewish. And a number of listeners here, and maybe they'll have the courage and integrity to speak up, have already messaged me on Twitter saying, "Oh, well, we know which side you're on, don't we? A dual citizen, ergo dual Canadian-Israeli citizen, therefore."
Yeah, whether you like it or not, people can criticize you and can call out your potential double standards or double allegiance all they want.
Or she can't be trusted, can she?
Oh, I get this.
Any of the people who wrote those messages have the integrity to speak up now and tell me why? Well, Vivian,
you don't come into a stream where Keith Woods is there and think that people won't have the courage to speak up. Of course, Keith Woods will speak up. Like, who does she think Keith Woods is that he's gonna fear? Like, oh my God. Oh my God, she has raised the potential of anti-Semitism. Oh, I have to leave. No, it's like Keith Woods will call you out.
I have a question. If we're talking about conflicts of interest, is it true you work for an Israeli intelligence firm called Black Cube?
No, who are you? No.
Keith Woods. Nice to meet you.
I get accused of being outside every time I pop into his face.
I think we're going back to the moving away.
No, it's on our Wikipedia. Yeah, it's on our Wikipedia. I'm not sure.
You can state it. People could check out on the Wikipedia. I just want to go back to the specific points. And there's one point you made earlier, Vivian.
She didn't really answer.
Yeah, but she jumped off. That's like I wanted to keep it on the particular points.
I wonder why.
But let's.
She jumped off. I wonder why. And so I think she tried slipping in a no, but was it a no, I'm not currently working, no, I'm on vacation right now, no, I do work for them, but it's a Saturday right now, so technically I don't work for them right now. But it's very interesting what Keith Woods has pulled here. So we need to talk about Brett Weinstein, a man against whom I have a standing plagiarism accusation, which he has never answered satisfactorily. He thought for a moment that he could get away with my statement about his plagiarism standing on the public space, but I don't think you can get out of it, Brett. You should come clean on this. Because the internet has been designed for not so much for people to listen to you. The internet, the wonders of the internet compared to cable TV, because cable TV, we've had people being able to output stuff into the community. There were people speaking on cable TV and people hearing them. But the greatness of the internet is that the celebrity or the person speaking in a stream gets called out. They interact with super chats. The greatness of the internet is that as a streamer, you end up learning. You end up having to adjust. You end up having to respond to contrarian critique. And I don't think you're doing the internet correctly, Brett. I think you are using strategies that are meant for another world. Like, yes, in the 1960s, not talking about this story was a good way to shut it down. But you can't do this in 2023. I am here standing on an every night basis on the internet and reminding that I have accused this man of plagiarism credibly and that all he had to answer to me was, oh, well, your claims are inaccurate. And as I've explained back then, and I will repeat it, if you accuse me of killing the lady in the blue dress, and I come out and I say your claim is inaccurate, that is not a very good defense. I would tend to believe that someone who answers this has probably killed a lady, but maybe she didn't have a blue dress, you know? So people are asking, what did he plagiarize? He plagiarized a guy named Pathogenetics, who made data calculations on Twitter documenting the difference in non-synonymous and synonymous codons in Omicron, as Omicron was rising as a COVID variant. And you know what? Talking about data that when forgetting to mention the person who uttered this data and did the research and did the calculations, that's, you know, these numbers really came from Pathogenetics. Forgetting to mention someone or quote someone or link to someone is totally understandable. Totally fine. But when someone says, hey, you forgot to mention this guy, all you have to do is correct your work. All I was asking to Brett has been to write a little link in his video, because his video is still out there. Write a little link that says, hey, I took these numbers from Pathogenetics. And, you know, there's no alternative explanation than the fact that he plagiarized Pathogenetics. Because when you're into numbers, there are features of numbers, like, if I do a calculation on my side, I may round it in a certain way, and you may round it in a different way. So when I go out and say, oh yeah, 2.37 gigawatts, and then you come out and you'll come out with a different number because your approach to the numbers will be slightly different. The numbers that Brett used on his stream have the absolute signature of having been taken from a single tweet by Pathogenetics with all these precise numbers and precise rounding. So there is no other source on the internet where an equivalent calculation would have been done and would somehow have converged toward the exact same numbers. And if there was such a source by now, Brett would have revealed it. So Brett, you are standing out there having plagiarized a man of the internet, and then you're complaining that your numbers are going down, and I see you complain on a weekly basis about deluded interpretations of your Twitter numbers. It's absolutely normal for Twitter, that for X, that you, if you do 5 to 10 tweets during a day or 5 to 10 tweets during a week, one of them will be super popular. The algorithm is going to detect it as triggering something into your viewers. And then the 9 others, maybe they won't be as popular. And then they're going to be sent by the algorithm to just your specialized crowd who could be interested in this specific subject. That is just how it is. And I'm sorry that you, every time Brett sees one of his tweets with like 4 times, 5 times less likes or retweets than the other tweets, he concludes, or he appears to conclude very often in these cases, that it must be that Twitter doesn't like something about this tweet. That's what he wrote recently. Twitter doesn't like something about this tweet. And I'm sorry, Brett, I think you're just being deluded. You're not being throttled. You're just entering a new kind of Twitter, which is actually, back in the days when you weren't on Twitter, that's how Twitter was very much. Twitter was looking for your highest quality content, your most engaging content, and then on the other stuff, you were less successful. So what's happening is that you, for the first time in your internet life, and I've been here before you, and let me tell you that it's been like this before, but for the first time in your internet life, in your young internet life, you are faced with actual competition for attention. The problem being that you have evolved mostly in a post-wave censorship benefiting era of the internet. And you benefited from censorship because a lot of us were not there to attract eyes and to attract attention. And in the absence of people like me, you have thrived into an overly coddled version of Twitter. What was absolutely foreign to the original Twitter. The original Twitter was a hard game and you had to play it hard to win. You didn't have to play as hard, Brett. And at this point, I am worried that you're losing the game of the internet, basically. As you should have lost it before, but I think it came late to you because you were cuddled by censorship. You were cuddled by a controlled environment in which you couldn't get called out. Now, this whole surfing on this idea that you're a victim, and I've made the same comments about your representation, and I would argue misrepresentation of the Gad Saad censorship by the Canadian government for misinformation, which is misleading in my view. I don't think he was. This whole fakery of being censored when you're not is very detrimental to free speech, because you're trying to obtain street creds of having dangerous IDs when in fact your IDs are barely dangerous. Like your IDs, Brett, are dangerous to a COVID vaccine fascist, maybe, but they're not very dangerous for the whole of society. If you want to know how censorship looks like, that is what it looks like. if you can show something like this, I will believe you. In your shadow banning claims, show me impressions and show me that suddenly you disappear from the public space And then Elon Musk here. This is, by the way, the number of impressions of my Twitter account. And that's just from 2016. But actually, I've been on Twitter since 2011. And eventually, I rose to prominence. And look at what happened under Parag Agrawal. Parag Agrawal becomes CEO. 2 months later, Twitter didn't know I existed anymore. And regularly, people were telling me, wow, Jeff, you're still alive. I had no idea. And then Elon Musk comes back. And a few months after, the impressions start again. That is what censorship looks like. That is the kind of graph that perhaps one day, if you ever have an ID that is so offensive and so good that people are scared of it, that's what your impression graph will look like. But something tells me that your impression graph doesn't look like this. Something tells me that your impression graph is just a slowly falling graph as people realize that you are not on the internet to do what the primary function of the internet is. The primary function of the internet is to engage. And you have refused for way too long to engage with rational content for you to keep your credibility in this community of thinkers. And I would recommend that you correct. If you want more Twitter viewers, correct. Engage with critiques of you, engage with claims about you, engage with theories that you should engage in, that you should be interested in if the scientific interest that you claim to have still exists. Overall, fuck your claims of censorship. It's delusional, makes you look terrible, and I totally understand why Elon Musk ended up banning you. He says, my account seems to be specially restricted on X/Twitter. High engagement tweets stay well below the fold on trends. Not the case under previous management. I brought this to Musk's attention. He asked for more info, then blocked me when I provided it. Perhaps that's on me. Listen. I've looked at the evidence, so here's evidence that leads to Brett Weinstein to conclude this. So he looks, he tweets something like Sam Harris, and he looks at the top tweets, okay? And then he sees, look, 3,000 likes, okay, it's at the top. 175 likes, it's second. 600 likes, 400 likes, it's there. Okay, 400 likes, it's there. And then he reaches his tweet. And his tweet was question for Sam Harris, blah, blah, blah. And he says, look, I have 9,000 likes. Why doesn't it show at the top? Brett, when you look at all these tweets, they are all in a tighter window within the 19 hours delay category. Your tweet is 21 hours ago. So Twitter discounts time a lot. So you have 9,000 likes on your tweet. But it may not be the current trending. It may not be related to the current trending subject around Sam Harris. And the top search category is actually very weird in the way it calculates things. It calculates all sorts of factors like the possibility of engagement outside of your network, the possibility of broad engagement with accounts that aren't already following you, the possibility of engagement with respect to the time window with which this tweet has been emitted. It's a very complex algorithm, and honestly, it rarely gives out good results. But it's not evidence that you're being targeted with shadow banning. It's just a very disorganized algorithm that seems to credit time and other factors in ways that are very hard to calculate. So that is why Brett Weinstein ended up being banned by Elon, ended up being blocked by Elon. And Elon is not someone who likes very much the block button. In fact, he discourages the use of it constantly. But in this case, he was probably annoyed that of the tactical boomerism of Brett Weinstein. It's like, okay, Brett, are you being intentionally boomer here? Are you trying to improve somehow your standing in the system by posing as a victim? That wouldn't be the first time we see that kind of behavior on the left. Callum Oxworth says, no, JF, the algorithm is obviously anti-Semitic. Ah, I had forgotten. This could be what it is. It could be that the algorithm is anti-Semitic. Libs of TikTok says, holy smokes, Elon just revealed that the ADL, whose goal is to fight anti-Semitism, pushed to shut down Libs of TikTok, which has nothing to do with anti-Semitism and is run by an Orthodox Jewish woman. So Elon Musk was speculating about the idea of about the idea of doing a ADL files like he did a Twitter files, where he would reveal how they've pushed very hard to get Libs of TikTok out. Cloud Warmer says, Jeff, I saw a video clip of Brett gaslighting some people of a particular in-group against people of another particular in-group. Since I saw this video, I don't like this guy. The group he hangs with in the intellectual dark web seem to be ideologically motivated in a manner that doesn't help free speech. Oh yeah, it's pretty amazing how Brett becomes irrational when it's questions around ethnicity and Jewishness. Holy shit, he goes totally irrational, like he did with me, you know. Instead of just engaging with my points, just engage with my science. No, it's like he went for the Nazi guilt by association accusation. Just straight for it. Cloud Warmer says, Jeff, you should reply to Brett and say, I can still talk to Elon. Let me know if you want to pass along any messages on your behalf. I will do them if you post a picture of you reading TRP. Oh, yeah, that would be fun. But, you know, that would be a fun joke. I'm at the border of doing it, let me tell you, because that is fun. That would be hilarious. But it's a little too aggressive. I don't like using Twitter to nag. I don't like that. I don't like that. It is borderline nagging. I'm super tempted to do it. I think it's a funny proposition. I'll think about, is there a polite way I could do this? Or maybe if I can wait at a good moment, let's say the next tweet he does about it, maybe in a week from now. But that would be a fascinating way to do my weekly Brett interaction. Benjamin Rubenstein says, this is interesting. This Israeli intelligence officer was outed on a... Okay, he was commenting on what Keith Woods exposed, and exposed an Israeli agent in the Mario Nafal show. And this guy was documenting further links to companies like Black Cube. I don't know what these companies do. The Ukrainian regime is frenetically issuing thousands of arrest warrants for Ukrainian males abroad. So they have sent... also, we always lose the stream 1 hour in. Anyways, I was about to end the show. So goodbye, boys. And Perhaps some of you are still receiving us live, but it seems that entropy as went down for people live. Anyways, yes, I wanted to say, yes, they are. And Poland is super collaborative at sending back the Ukrainian mails. It's so terrible. It's so cynical. Like, oh, yeah, we need more cannon fodder. Yeah, we need more of you to go die. It's there doesn't seem to be a serious hope for the Ukrainian side to win. And yet they will send all of their mails to die for nothing. I'm super sad about it. An insider paper says Russian state TV threatens nuclear strike on the US, according to Newsweek. Threatens. I mean, they talk about it on TV shows sometimes, but we do that too. We have people like Sam Harris who have been speculating about a nuclear first strike onto the Middle East. Philosophically, he would say, but he did. So it's like, yeah, all nations do this, but when other nations do it to the US, we call it a threat. But when Sam Harris gets called out for doing that by someone like Cenk Uygur, then Sam Harris is like, oh my God, no. That was just philosophical considerations. Well, there is a point at which your philosophical consideration is a threat to someone else, you know. There's a point at which your ideas are dangerous to someone else, and there's a point at which your existence is a threat for someone else. Much love, everyone, and see you all tomorrow. Thank you.